What Christmas really is. It's not a time of year. It's not a feeling. It's a promise.
And it's about vengeance. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another Happy Holidays edition of the Brother Movie Factory.
The brother. Because Gus isn't here anymore.
No, you're dead.
He's dead.
Got hit by a bus. He's dead.
It's just knife now.
Just knife and not even brothers anymore. Knife or Jimmy. And we're going to be here for the rest of the evening. We're gonna treat you. Treat you to a nice little cup of brandy, not like a red solo cup, like a real cup, a little glass. And we got knife over here. He's gonna treat you to a nice little Daywalker blood.
That's right, motherfuckers. We're gonna arm you with some garlic spray, some swords and guns and that.
Now, are you related? Are you related, Mr. Knife, to Blade?
Call me Knife.
All right, we are the Brothers Movie Factory. I'm your host, Ben. With me, as always, the brother of the Brothers Movie Factory, not Knife, but...
Santa Claus.
Name?
Gus.
Name?
Patricia.
I was hoping, I didn't know if you would get that reference. That's from the Tim Allen Santa Claus movie. They're trying...
Papa Gisho.
Yeah, they're like trying it, and they just get, when I say name, you say Scott Calvin. Name? Kris Kringle. Name? Santa Claus.
Papa Gisho.
He does all the different languages. Yeah. Yes, we are...
Patricia.
I didn't know where that came from. We are the Brothers Movie Factory. We are a podcast of the movies, by the movies, for the movies. I would say, and I believe you would say, we are...
The movies.
We are the movies.
I think so, yes.
Yeah, maybe. On this podcast.
Can you prove
here,
that in court?
I think we did. I think the post office agreed. On this podcast here, we take a movie from our past or the past, and then we watch that film, review that film, kind of talk about what works, what didn't work, discuss what we liked about it, what we didn't. Then we submit that movie to the factory. That is where we take this picture, and we kind of rework it to modern booking. We look at the director, we switch him out. We look at the music, we switch it out. We look at the director, the director again, then we switch him out. Now we look at the cast and crew.
We pick a director to change, and we change that one.
Yeah, yeah. No, we take the actors and actresses of the film, and we swap them to modern booking. Who you want to be Santa Claus and Miracle on 34th Street today? Well, we're going to find out, because what movie did we watch this week?
We didn't watch It's a Wonderful Life.
No, we did. Not yet. I've never seen that movie. I don't intend to.
I was in it.
Yeah, I was in it. I don't watch my own movies.
We didn't watch Home Alone.
No. No. And why I amuse you? I watched, speaking of Joe Pesci, just real quick side note, watched My Cousin Vinny. It's pretty good.
Hey.
And Marissa Tomei.
Pretty good.
Hot Aunt May. Anyways.
Hot Joe Pesci.
We didn't, yeah, real hot Joe Pesci, yeah, and Ralph Macchio.
Hey.
But no, we didn't watch Home Alone.
No.
Well, we watch.
We watched, as you said, Miracle on 34th Street, mm-hmm. The original from 1947. Not the 1994
with
remake.
With Matilda
and Dr. John Hammond. Mm. I am Santa Claus. I spend no expense.
But, yes.
Now, 1947... Here we go.
So, yes, we did wanted to kind of kick off our December. This is our first show, official show of December. We call it October Spooky Month, Halloween Spooky Month.
What is December now?
Is it December Jolly Month?
Holly Jolly.
Holly Jolly December.
Are you having a holly...
Why am I saying that like Alan Rickman?
You think he's just...
Are you having a holly jolly Christmas?
Yes. We just decided to kick that off with a movie that neither of us has seen in several years, I think. I feel like the last time we watched it was actually after Christmas. I think we watched it on, like, New Year's.
We actually watched it on the hottest day of summer. No.
No? I was like,
You looked at me like,
ah?
Really?
I don't think so.
No.
No, I believe we watched this several years ago, probably five, six, maybe seven.
More than that, I was, maybe.
Yeah, probably like 6 or 7 years ago. So it's been a while, but we decided to watch Miracle on 34th Street. It was your choice this week.
Indeed.
And you wanted to, so we watched it in black and white, old school, got Christmas food to watch this movie. We were eating some Thai food while we watched it.
We put up the fake Christmas tree, yeah. Put up the lights, had a pine scented candle roaring.
Oh, it was Christmas in December. What?
don't say.
Yeah, Christmas in December.
I picked this movie because I was like, let's get a little injection right in the ass for some Christmas action.
Nostalgia, spirit, like old school film nostalgia.
Oh yeah. This is the second oldest film we've done on the pod.
Dracula being one.
Yes, not being the oldest yet. Same goes for this. I enjoy older films. Something about them, they just don't make them like that anymore.
You even said, you're like, this movie is just Uma Thurman-ing. This movie is oozing charm. I'm having such a hard time because for those of you listening at home, Gus, if anyone's seen the picture of Becky Lynch from the WWE wearing, when she's all bloodied
Becky
up.
Becky Lynch.
And her nose is broken. So Gus has a shirt, for those of you who don't know who Becky Lynch is, just a bloodied, redheaded girl with a big smile on her face. And every time I look up, I'm glancing at that first.
Yeah, you're just ready, seeing for, this. Ready for this? It's my wife.
I keep looking at
him. It's my wife.
Yeah, this girl with blood all over her face. Hey, on his face.
She's the man.
She is the man. But you said this movie is oozing charm like none other.
It's oozing charm like Becky's nose was oozing blood.
But definitely, yeah, it definitely has that. It just has that feel, something you don't get from movies today. It's so organic.
This movie is hilarious. It's charming. Mm. It's tender.
Ah.
You'll laugh. You'll cry.
Well, we can't have all those things.
But this movie has all those things. That's exciting, too.
Mm.
And, hey, it's groovy.
It's groovy. And why is that? Let's get into it. Why is this movie so many things? Which it really is. When we really sit down, you watch this movie, it is really funny. There's genuinely funny parts. There's genuinely, like, romantic parts where you're like, oh, I hope they get together.
Mm-hmm.
There's generally heartwarming spots. There's kind of keeping you on the edge of your seat spots, like Law and Order SVU,
yeah.
Court case spots. Mm-hmm. Like this movie has the biggest court case since O.J. Simpson.
Since Atticus Finch.
Yeah, since Atticus Finch. Gregory Peck, damn it.
This movie also delivers a great message of what Christmas really is. It's not a time of year. It's not a feeling. It's a promise.
And it's about vengeance.
Yeah. I mean, the gifts. Did we watch The Grinch?
I don't know. I love The Grinch, too.
There's two references. Speaking of references, side note, referring back to last week's podcast, we did Star Wars, right?
Mm.
First podcast that we've done, I'm pretty sure that we didn't make a Spaceballs reference.
Mm-mm.
And I think it's because we're so enamored with talking about
Star
Wars.
Did we mention Tobey Maguire?
We did.
Okay.
You're like, you know who'd make a good Darth Vader?
Tobey Maguire. There it is. We already mentioned Tobey Maguire now, so we're good. We're good for the rest of the episode.
And he already did Jimmy Stewart.
We did Jimmy. We did that. We just need a little Michael Caine.
Hey, Michael Caine. And I guess we kind of talked about Spaceballs.
Yep.
Hey, all right. We're clean. We're ready
good.
To go.
We're good.
Everybody got that? Hey.
So right away, this movie kicks off with just kind of a nice old man walking through the city of New York.
Why'd you say it like that?
Say New York.
From New York, don't you know? Like you're from Minnesota.
Oh, yeah.
New York.
Fargo.
I'm from New York.
So that's how he talked.
How about from New York?
I don't know about that one, Mr. Kringle.
Yeah. That's kind of that. Wasn't it Alfred?
Alfred.
Yeah, we'll get him in a
but,
little spit.
But we get early on into our Kris Kringle, and we see this nice elderly man that he is. Thinks or believes himself to be Santa Claus. He is Santa Claus, as far as he is concerned. And we're kind of led on to that early because he's referring to himself like, oh, I know, I should know this, or I've had experiences being Santa Claus, or he runs into like a mall Santa that's about to be in the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade, and he's talking to that Santa, and he's trying to teach him how to use the whip, and he's doing it perfectly, and he's like, oh, I can't have you going out and disgracing me like this. This is disgraceful. Like,
why is it disgraceful?
Yeah, like he believes.
No, why? You didn't say.
Yeah, he believes that he's disgraceful. Because he was drunk?
Yeah, you didn't say that.
Oh, I didn't?
No, you said the Santa Claus, blah, blah.
The Santa Claus was a bad Santa.
The Santa Claus that was going to be in the parade, he is plastered. He is
fat-faced. Oh, it's awfully cold. I got to keep warm somehow. Oh,
man's got to do something to keep warm.
Yeah.
And it's disgraceful. I will not let my name be dragged through the muck. So he goes to the showrunner of the parade, Miss Walker, and she asks our Santa Claus, our Kris Kringle, to be the Santa Claus in the Macy's Day Parade. Mm. Thus begins it all. But you really get a good feel of this character in his first dialogue scene, right after the credits. He's walking up to a department store, and there's a man putting up the display. He's just putting just reindeer figurines, you know, in the window. And our character, Kris Kringle, he knocks on the window. He's like, you're making a mistake. You're doing everything wrong. Even Dasher wouldn't be there. He'd be on my left. And Donner would – he has three horns, not four, or the other way around, whatever. But he and the store owner's just like, okay, buddy, we'll say yes.
Get out of here.
Get the fuck out of here.
He says that.
Get out of here. Get the fuck out of here. He's like, well, Merry Christmas. So, anywho, we get back to our Macy's Day Parade action, and our Kris Kringle, he's taking part, and he's being the Santa Claus. Mm-hmm. Better than anyone in the past. Mm-hmm. And
so good, in fact, yeah. That he gets a job.
Hey.
He gets a job being the Santa for Macy's, the official Santa for Macy's. And from there, they give him a list, and they inform him, like, hey, if a kid walks up and he doesn't know what he wants for Christmas, which what fucking kid doesn't know what they want for Christmas?
Me.
Now, I know, and as you get older, I'm like, oh, what do I want? When I'm a kid, I feel like I want this and this and this. I don't even know what this is, but I want it.
Now I'm older, the only thing I want is Funkos.
Yeah, you're like, I saw that was the third mom had texted me the other day, and she was like, what do you want? What does Gus want? And I was like, this, probably Funkos.
all he needs, Funkos.
Yeah. But, yeah, no, that, so if he does, if he runs, comes across a kid sitting on his lap, doesn't know what they want for Christmas, he's supposed to, why are you making out with your shirt?
That's what I want for Christmas.
Becky with the bloody face.
Becky Lynch.
But he's to kind of force toys on them, say like, oh, he wants this, or you should get this, and give them, put it in their mind that that's what they want for Christmas. But he kind of spurts this this goodwill campaign and tells a mother, like, hey, I keep track of where all the toys are, where all the toys are in stock. And he tells his mother the mother says, don't tell him he's going to get this toy because I can't find it anywhere. No one has it. And he says, oh, you'll be fine. He'll get it. And then he tells the mother what store it's going to be at, which is weird.
It's at this store, 850.
Yeah, which is weird because it's Macy's and he's sending them away. He's sending their business away to another store, which is odd and kind of unheard of.
Even to the point where the head of the toy department is seeing how successful his Santa is, and he goes just to listen in. He's like, ah, yes, money, 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 money. And he listens in, and he's like, oh, and then Santa's like, oh, you can find that at this store down the street.
Gimbals.
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 Our toy store owner's like, yes, yes, at Gimbals. Gimbals?
Yeah, yes. So it's very interesting, because in my head, as I was watching this film, it's funny because it never really tells you, like, is he really Santa or is he not really Santa? But he has these things to him, like, he knows so much, he's so intelligent, and the fact that he is able to, like, keep track of all these toys. Like, he just has a book of all the stores and their inventories, basically, and it just seems like something that really someone like Santa Claus would have and not some average normal guy that was living in an old folks' home.
Right.
So yeah, where do we really go from there?
Well, Miss Walker, who really gets to talk to her employee,
And she doesn't really believe in Santa Claus.
And that's the thing. She doesn't believe in much. She
doesn't believe in anything.
She doesn't believe in... She's a nihilist. No, she doesn't believe in... She doesn't believe in nonsense.
Yes.
She doesn't believe it. She doesn't want her daughter to be caught up in such fantasies.
Because then she grows up thinking Prince Charming's coming, and then he doesn't.
Sounds like a bitter woman.
Yes, very.
And, well, she's talking with her employee, Chris Kringle, and he tells her, hey, I am motherfucking Santa Claus.
We've already sworn more on this episode than we have in the past.
Fuck, fuck, fuck.
Easy.
Mother, motherfuck. Mother,
no.
Motherfuck, fuck. Mother,
no.
Motherfuck. Noise, noise,
no.
Noise. One, two.
No.
One, two, three, four.
I stopped you. Santa Claus.
Oh, yes, Santa. So, and he's convincing her, like, I am Santa. I do believe this is who I am. And she's like, well, honestly, who are you? And to the point where she is so concerned that she sends him away for a psychiatric evaluation.
Yes, because she's worried that he's this crazy old guy. Weird old guy.
That's right.
Definitely gets a psyche eval. He kind of makes an enemy in the process of the psychiatrist, because at the end, he's actually giving the psychiatrist a psyche eval. And the psychiatrist then basically tells him that he should be fired, and that he cannot, in his right judgment, say that this man is in the right state of mind.
Yes. He kind of makes a... Or Chris Kringle kind of makes a fool of the old psychiatrist there.
Yes.
And he gets offended to the point where he's like, I have a vendetta against Santa Claus now. Kind
yeah.
of. So, just a lot of controversies begin there. It's like, do we keep this man on because our psychiatrist says no, but he's such a success and he's so nice and kind and charming and he's not doing anything wrong other than saying he's Santa Claus.
Mm-hmm.
And is that appropriate? Maybe. And that's kind of the dilemma that our characters are faced with this movie.
He's not hurting anyone.
He's not hurting anyone. He's not harming himself or others. He's just saying he's Santa Claus. Does that make him crazy? And
your name is Gus, correct?
Yeah, well, maybe.
I don't know. It was Patricia earlier. So.
I could be Patricia, darling.
You could be Patricia. I'm not going to bite her. I'm not going to bite her.
I could be Wolf.
You could be Wolf.
He's very charming.
You could be Knife.
I could be Knife. Hey.
I heard
hey.
You call you Knife.
Call me Knife.
I'll call you Knife. I think I'll call you I'll call you Knife if you call me Jimmy.
I'll call you Jimmy. Just don't call me late for dinner.
I mean, from what I understand, some motherfuckers are always trying to eat soup with a fork. So, yes, his psyche is being kind of evaluated and trying to figure out, you know, what may be any potential dangers for him. And the psychiatrist says, you know, if you challenge this man's delusion, he will become violent. He has latent anger within him, latent evil. Malicious intent, I think
yeah.
he keeps saying, like, latent malicious intent.
He carries around a cane, he could use it as a weapon.
Yes. Throughout, that's kind of his vendetta, is he's against this Chris Kringle, because Chris Kringle kind of made a fool of him. And so we're kind of introduced to Miss Waka's daughter.
Yes.
From here on out. You want to kind of explain the daughter
so we got
and
old,
her thought process?
We got old Susan, young girl, very, very smart, very... just ahead of her time, we'll say. And she's being looked after by the neighbor, Mr. Gailey. And we here find out that Susan there, she is like her mother in that she doesn't believe in nonsense. She doesn't believe in fantasies. She wants to know the truth about things in the world. And that's what her mother taught her, and that's what she follows. And Mr. Gailey is like, well, you should believe in fantasies and things like that. You're young, like, yeah, they don't flat out say this, but it's like the world is full of charming things, it's full of ugly things. But you're young. Why not expand your mind in the good way? So we kind of get that dilemma, that arc of the film, right? It's like, how do these people come to believe, like Mr. Gailey believes, like Chris Kringle believes? How are we going to get the Walkers to have some faith and to believe in something fantastical? And what is faith is also the real question here. So we get introduced to them. And you kind of get a hint that, you know, Mr. Gailey and Miss Walker there, they might have an unsaid thing, but they have different beliefs. So they kind of got to meet in the middle. Maybe they'll find their way together by the end of the film.
Maybe.
We'll find, maybe, Midge.
Maybe, we never know. Or do we? Let's get into the film.
I just heard you, like,
gurgle.
Gurgle.
Baby. In here with us. We're still hungry.
Oh, you hear that?
I hear those ice cubes going.
Nice.
That water. But yeah, there's this kind of this unsaid thing between them, sure. And that's where the romance comes in.
Movie's got it all.
Yeah, movie's got it all. And we're kind of introduced to this relationship between those two, and it's budding, maybe. But yeah, like you said, they have different beliefs. Like, he kind of believes that they're in this imagination. It's really what it boils down to, is Mrs. Walker doesn't really have this imagination factor. She doesn't see the she doesn't see the point of having imagination.
Imagination.
Mr. Gailey does. He does see the point of imagination, sees that it's very important. So does Kris Kringle. And basically, ultimately, Kris Kringle comes home to their house, and Mr. Gailey offers him to stay with him.
Yes.
And he says, oh, that's,
he's
that's
like,
great.
Oh, I live alone in my apartment.
I got twin beds.
I got twin beds.
The twin beds are in the same room.
He's they're like in the same out. Room. Why don't you stay with me?
Yeah.
I'm like, in today's day and age, it's like, that's a little strange.
There's a couple things in this. You're like, Like, they have Kris Kringle, like, this man that she worries is insane, and she just leaves him alone in a room with her daughter.
Yeah. You two talk for a while.
She's like, good night. She shuts the door, and he's just there. It's like, eesh. I said to you, I'm like, this is like the beginning of Criminal Minds.
But it's right before
he kills the family, takes the daughter.
Damn it! This movie is innocent.
It is, but at the same time, you're like, this could go south real fast.
That's the way the world has morphed. Our dark minds just assume the worst.
Yeah, you're like, this old guy probably a pedophile.
Just to assume the muck of life.
That's next. We're gonna have like. That's what Santa Claus. Santa Claus is the next predator.
Oh God. Yeah, that's what I like about this movie is it portrays the world and there's hope. Damn it, there's hope.
That's the whole thing. And it's also not only does the movie portray that. Yeah, sure, there's hope out there. You know, it's important to find the hope in the world, but also it's important to note that it says, you know, it's okay to just believe in things even though you don't know if they exist or not.
That's what faith is.
Yeah, faith. It's about hope, about faith. Just kind of sometimes believing in something is
believe
smart.
What your heart.
Let me ask you something. Have you ever seen $1 million?
Yes. And Monopoly.
No, like legitimate. Have you ever seen $1 million?
Oh well. Yeah, no.
No, you've never seen $1 million. I don't know why you just did that.
That's something Jimmy Stewart did. Be like, whoa. Yet, no.
Vertigo. Vertigo.
No, I haven't.
But have you ever seen $1 million? No. Well, just because you never seen something doesn't mean it doesn't exist. So that's a Santa Claus line from the nice little kid in there, Charlie in Santa Claus. But we're talking about another
Santa Claus.
The one
Goldberg, Santa Slay.
Yeah, it's kind of teaching us that there's this importance to believe in something. So Santa kind of formulates this plan, Kris Kringle, that he's been kind of worried about the world and their belief in Santa Claus and their belief in Christmas. Because Christmas is more than just a day. It's a feeling. And he's kind of worried about it. He decides that they are Mrs. Walker and her daughter are going to be his test subjects on a small scale. If he can convert them to believe in Santa Claus, to believe in him, then he will know that there's hope to change everyone else's minds, to change everyone to believe that there is a Santa Claus again. And so he kind of sets out on this journey to do that, and he's spending a lot of time with the daughter, and he convinces her to tell him what she wants for Christmas, which she reveals is a house. She wants a house. He's like, oh, it's a tall order.
What are you going to do with a big house like that?
Yes.
Live in it.
Yeah.
With my mother.
And a big swing in the backyard.
And then she... The scene is... It's so... It's kind of cheesy using this word because it's in even the preview for the movie, but it says it's tender. But this is a tender scene.
Because he's a tender old man with a so girl sweet. That never had a father and...
He's got that little twinkle in his eye, and she shows
he's Santa Claus.
Yeah, for the first time, she shows a little twinkle in her eye, and she gets excited.
She's very matter of fact, that point. Like,
yeah, she's no bullshit kind of girl. But this is the first time she's like, you see, there's more to her as a character, and she's like, oh, I want this house so me and my mother can live in it. And we can have a backyard and a swing, and then she like catches herself. And, comes back down. Mm. And that's when Santa's like, well, you know, we'll see what we can do.
Yeah. So it is interesting. And he kind of it gives you the feeling that he will pull something off. Like, he doesn't say no. He doesn't lead on, really, that he couldn't do it. And it's kind of interesting because he does give her that hope and that belief. And ultimately... We're led on to the next little bit of the film, next half of the film there, with them kind of becoming increasingly more cozy with each other. Mm-hmm. Mrs. Walker, Mr. Gailey, getting more, I don't know, intimate, maybe, just kind of becoming more friendly.
More friendly, more how do you do's.
Yeah, and the daughter becoming even more infatuated with Kris Kringle. Kris Kringle's really enjoying his job. And loving what he's doing, but then his friend Alfred, who's the janitor, who wants to be Santa, wants to be a store Santa, is told by the psychologist at Macy's, the one that Kris Kringle kind of tore down. He's informed that the reason that he wants to be a Santa Claus is because he has a deep regret in his mind or something of that nature.
Yeah,
correct,
deep seated. Anxieties and
something just, ridiculous,
emotional distress and all kinds of crap.
Kris Kringle confronts him, ends up hitting him on the head with his umbrella for really no reason.
With his cane.
Yeah. Bops him on the head.
The very thing that the psychiatrist said earlier, he could become violent. Yes. He's got a cane. He could use it as a weapon.
Yeah. And he bops him right on the head. Leaves big old welt. They end up kind of formulating a plan to have him committed to a psych center, basically.
Mm-hmm. Now we got him.
Yeah, now
we've been trying to prove this man to be crazy all along. Now here's our chance.
Yeah. So they do it. They kind of do it behind Mrs. Walker's back and Mr. Macy's back. They have him committed, and it comes out, basically, that Santa has to be put on trial, whether or not he should be deemed insane or not. Mm-hmm. Is basically what that boils down to. So Santa calls Mr. Gailey to...
Who is an attorney.
Is an attorney,
yes.
And he becomes his attorney, and he's defending Santa Claus, and it's the DA, the state of New York, is going up against Mr. Gailey and Kris Kringle. And it really is a really good trial. You kind of lean on it.
It's exciting.
Yeah, it is exciting. It gets you on the edge of your seat.
I wonder. It's like Law and Order shit.
Yeah, it's like end of SVU, trial shit. Who they call? They call the stand Mr. Macy, and do you believe in Santa Claus? And there's a big newspaper article.
Like
he's thinking, he's having a daydream. It's newspaper article pops up and says Mr. Macy declines that Santa Claus exists or something like that. It's
says his Santa Claus is fraud.
Yeah,
then he has another fantasy of daydream of all the kids smiling and leaning in and Santa waving at him and. He just has that moment, that epiphany. He's like, yes, I do believe he is Santa.
Yes.
So now it's not just to prove that if this man is sane or not, it's to prove that he is Santa Claus.
Yeah.
That's what the trial
is. Not only that it is that to prove that he's Santa Claus, it also shows that there's more to it. Throughout the defense is basically that it's very matter of fact. There is no Santa Claus, is their case. There is no Santa Claus, is what they're trying to say. And there's no proof that there is. But he also says there's no proof that there isn't. And I think what that right there, and even in that Macy's moment, Mr. Macy moment, is it's kind of saying there's more to it than just Santa Claus the person. Christmas is more than just a day. It's a feeling. So Santa Claus is more than just a person. It's a feeling. If you say that this person that all these kids believe in isn't Santa Claus, it's going to hurt Christmas in general. So it was kind of interesting. I love how they ultimately get the ultimately win the case. It's a great kind of swerve moment. You're like, ah, this is how they're going
to
do it.
Yeah, they have like one more day to prove. They need factual like evidence.
They need like state government official, mayor, someone telling them something. Santa Claus is real.
They got one day to do it, and everyone's kind of down, not knowing what to do. Susan asks Mother, is like, is Mr. Kringle sad? She's like, yes, Susan, he's very sad. It's like, well, I'm going to write him a letter, because I do believe that he is Santa. I do believe. And the mother's like, I'm beginning to think I believe too, Susan. And so it's like, finally, they believe. The whole goal of Kris Kringle was to get
finally,
them to believe.
Santa has come back to the North Pole! Finally, Santa has come home.
Is Dwayne The Rock Johnson going to be our Santa?
He might. Way things, yeah, I might cast The Rock. John Cena as Santa.
Whoa. He wouldn't be bringing tenderness. He'd be bringing knuckle sandwiches.
You know what, though? The problem with John Cena as Santa is you'd never see him.
My nipples just got hard.
Like John Cena. As Santa. They're like interviewing John Cena. They're like, John, what do you bring to this role as Santa Claus? He's like, ruthless aggression!
Oh my god, I'm done.
Ultimately, yes, they do bring in...
He's like, I believe too, which was the whole goal of Kris Kringle's, get them to believe.
Yes.
So Susan writes Santa a letter like, hey, I heard you were sad. I just want you to know that I believe in you. I believe you are Santa. And then even the mother writes at the bottom, like, I believe too. And that's enough for him. But that letter gets sent in the mail, post office. They find the letter. They're like, for years I've been seeing letters to Santa, you know, to the North Pole, everywhere in the world, but I've never seen one to the courthouse in New York City, blah, blah, blah. And they're like, oh, we got like 50,000 letters in the back. Why don't we just send them all there? That's where he is. Let's send them to him. And that's the proof they needed.
Mm-hmm.
U.S. sanctioned government mail.
It's illegal for the mail, for the United States Post Office to send mail to the wrong person. They're very efficient. They make sure that they take precautions not to send it to the wrong person. And they send all this mail saying that this man is Santa Claus. The United States government basically says that he is Santa Claus.
Here's his mail.
here's his mail. All these kids are waiting. They kind of gloss over that. But you see where I'm going? They're like, yeesh. I know he got my letter.
Whoops.
Ultimately, he is found not be insane, and he's allowed to walk
free.
They
decree he is Santa Claus.
Yes, he is. The man is Santa Claus, and he ends up having a little Christmas party at his old folks' home.
Old Pardookie.
Yeah, and he gives the doctor there, he gives him a new X-ray machine, which he mentions earlier that was what the doctor wanted. That's what he got him. And then the daughter's very upset because she didn't see any proof that she got a house.
She didn't get her house.
She didn't get her house, didn't get a letter saying that she was getting the house, anything like that. And
that's kind of what I liked about this movie. Up, you know, we're almost near the end here. And you even as a viewer, you're like, that is Santa Claus. Mm-hmm. But he looks like Santa. He's nice. He's jolly. He does all these wonderful things to the point where he doesn't do anything. Like, he doesn't do anything to prove he's Santa. But that's also the point. Like, does he need to do something to prove it? He just is. He is who he is. You do get hints, like, earlier when he's working as a store Santa, there's a little girl who comes up, and the mother... She's Dutch. She doesn't speak English. And the mother's like, I told her you wouldn't be able to talk with her, but she insisted that she does because she saw you, and she said you are the real Santa. And wouldn't you know it, he just starts speaking Dutch, and she starts speaking Dutch too. We were watching this with the roommate, and he even pointed out, he's like, didn't they have subtitles back in the 40s? It's like, no, they did. But that's part of the
They didn't invent that yet.
Yeah, that's part of the magic of the scene is she's speaking Dutch and he's speaking back with her and they start singing a song. Movie factoid. What she actually is saying is, I don't need anything for Christmas. The greatest gift was that I was adopted. Mm. So there's your factoid for the week there. But yeah, that's what I was getting at is he doesn't like show that he is Santa, even to the point where that doctor, he gets his x-ray machine earlier in the movie, our store Santa, or Kris Kringle here, he gets a check, you know, for his duties. He's like, oh, I'm going to use this to buy that x-ray machine for my doctor friend, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
So, and here we are near the end. Susan is a little upset because she said, if you can get me this house that I've always wanted, I'll know you're Santa.
Mm. And she keeps saying, I believe, even though it's stupid.
Yeah, pretty much. Mother's like, you know, it's one of those, like, if at first you don't succeed, try again. So even though it didn't happen this time, you just got to keep believing,
And so Kris, before they leave his little Christmas party, gives Mr. Gailey directions home. And he tells him, you have to follow these. You have to follow these directions. And they're driving.
You avoid traffic, and I'll get you home faster. Yes.
And the daughter is very upset still. She's saying, I believe, even though it's stupid, in the back of the car. And all of a sudden, she screams to stop. And they slam on the brakes. And wouldn't you know it, right there is the house, the exact house from the picture that Kris gave her. And it is for sale. It's right there for her, and she runs inside, different time, runs inside. No one's home, obviously, and Mr. Gailey and Miss Waka walk in, and they're looking around, and she says, this is my house, this is the house that I asked for, and it's here, and this is the first time I saw it, and I know it's mine, and I'm going to go outside and look and see if there's a swing.
And she even turns to Mr. Gailey, she's like, my mother said if at first, you know, you don't succeed, try again. That's what I did. I just kept believing, and you know what? Here it is. This is my house.
Yeah.
And she goes and she looks and she's like, there is a swing. And then Mr. Gailey's like, you told her that?
And he plants a big old fat one on her.
Socks are right in the schnoz.
Big old wet one. Is that a little rascals? Big old wet one.
Can I ask for a big wet one?
Yeah.
A kiss? My man.
Alfalfa.
Yes.
How.
He plants a big old kisser right on the gown.
Yeah, and then
gown.
They kind of glance over at the old fireplace, and right by the fireplace is a cane.
The cane.
Kris Kringle's cane. And I love that it was right by the fireplace, too.
Yeah.
That was kind of a nice little homage. Charming. But at the same time, he even says, he's like, did I do a good thing, or did I do a bad thing?
He kind of looks in, like, disbelief. Like, yeah. I knew he was Santa, but I didn't know he was Santa.
Yeah, like and that's the thing that I kind of love about this movie, is it really doesn't. It leaves it up to you to decide, really, at the end. It never gives you any definitive proof.
And there it is. Like, what do you believe?
Yeah.
Do you have the faith?
Yeah, and that's ultimately what it's about, because, like I said, no definitive proof at the end. It's just, it gives you all the facts. You see it throughout the movie. You see moments where you're like, this guy's got to be Santa. He knew how to speak Dutch to the girl. I mean, it was just kind of like a moment, like, oh. He knew where all the toys were, like I said. He knows how to crack the whip. He knows all those facts. He, you know, even his application, his next of kin, were all the reindeer.
Yeah.
So it was just like some of the things he knew, and also the fact that, you know, whatever people wanted, he made sure they got. You know, right down to the kids, he was telling the people, like, you go to this store, you'll get it. He was making sure it was almost like Santa, but in a different way. Maybe he wasn't making the toys, but he was making the presents happen, in a sense. Because even like that with the house, like, he didn't buy her the house. It was just for sale. Didn't say sold, but he made that he gave them the ability. He sent them to the right place to get this perfect house that the daughter wanted for Christmas.
Or did he make the house?
He built it with his bare hands. He built that whole neighborhood.
That's why he left his cane.
Yeah. He built it with the cane. Nailed everything in with it. Sawed the wood with that round cane.
He bopped that dude on the head. He's like, this is a good hammer. I'll use this.
He's nothing but pegs. Pegs and holes.
Gumdrops and sugar.
And her A little sugar. Case of gum she keeps in her yuck side thing.
Sugar. Water.
No, but and then that wraps up our film here. And you know, it's so I keep saying charming and innocent, but this is really a movie for all ages. I really think it's timeless. So like even
I noticed that too.
This came out in 1947, but even like 50 years from now, it'll still be relevant and it'll still be poignant.
Yeah, no, I noticed that too, because there's nothing really that tells you its age almost.
No.
Other than a couple dialogue moments,
yeah,
maybe,
the way people talk and maybe how they act a little bit and like the aesthetics, like the setting and all that, but the message is still going to be relevant and important for years to come. And there's just something so sweet about Edmund Gwenn, who played Kris Kringle, who played our Santa. One of the best performance, I would say the best performance of a Santa, but that's just an opinion there. But Natalie Wood, who played Susan. Okay, I'm getting choked up saying this.
Jesus.
movie factoid. They went through all the filming of this movie, and it wasn't until after they finished filming and they wrapped and Natalie Wood saw Edmund Gwenn without the beard that she realized that he wasn't actually Santa.
Jesus, you're getting that jerked up.
I think that's so sweet. She thought he was actually Santa. He was...
You're like, I need more brandy.
Oh my God, I'm crying. It's so sweet. Like she thought he was Santa, and it was till after they were done. She's like, "Oh,
you know your dreams here."
What do you want for Christmas now, kid?
Bitch. All right. Yeah. No. I definitely think this needs to be, because a lot of times, you know, we fall into this thing of Christmas movies. We have our modern ones, like everyone loves Elf, everyone loves the Santa Claus, everyone loves How the Grinch Stole Christmas, and
everyone loves Muppets Christmas Carol and these damn Muppets.
Yes, but this is a movie you should throw into your rotation. I think it's a very good film. It gets you back into the holiday spirit, and I think it harkens you back to, like, why not believe in Santa, you know? Definitely there comes a time where everyone questions that. Is Santa real? Is Santa not? I'll leave that up to the viewers to decide. I won't say anything on this podcast, huh? For the younger viewers out there that are listening to this.
For the fucking younger kids,
yeah,
out there.
But really, it does give you that sense of wonder and that sense of hope, and maybe it brings a little bit more of that magic from when you were a kid.
If you just believe.
Yeah, brings it back for this film. All right, well, you ready to take this movie to the factory? You see that fly on your mic stand there?
Oh, let's save his little life by ending it.
Whoa. Santa. So let's get into the factory. On this portion of the show, we take the film we just watched, this case, Miracle on 34th Street, and we're going to – what do you want to do for this one? You just want to – there wasn't really a lot of music, I noticed. I don't know if you weren't into music.
Sure there was.
All done by Josh Groban.
It's Josh Groban doing all the music.
All Michael Bolton.
Ooh. All smooth jazz.
Yeah, Kenny G.
I'll
have Yanni do this picture.
Hey, why not?
All right, we'll do composer then. So what we'll do for this movie is we will change up for modern booking for today's day and age. We will get a new director, get a modern day composer for the music. We'll do we'll recast Mr. Gailey, Miss Walker, Susan, and Santa. Good with that?
Burp, sorry.
Okay. No, that's fine. Fuck yourself. All right. So first things first, let's go in director. Who you want for your director?
All right, my director, I want someone who can take me on a little magical journey. All right. Make me charmed off my little socks here.
What are you talking like?
I don't know.
Seth Rogen.
What the fuck is that? How about my buddy? Speaking of that noise, how about my buddy Bob Zemeckis? Old Rob. Robbie baby.
Okay, yeah.
Rob Zemeckis, he's had his hand wedged right into some Christmas movies, one being a classic, and the Polar Express.
Mm-hmm. And Christmas Carol.
And he did Christmas Carol. I wouldn't call that a classic because not many people watch that movie. But people
it's
watch.
It's kind of creepy.
I mean, it's a Christmas Carol. That's yeah. I'd rather watch Muppets Christmas
but
Carol.
Jim Carrey is creepy.
Humbug.
Yeah. Jim Carrey is anyway, creepy.
But my boy Rob Zemeckis, his we've mentioned him before on the pod, but for our new listeners out there, he's done Back to the Future trilogy. He's done Who Framed Roger Rabbit. He did Forrest Gump, Cast Away. I already mentioned the Polar Express, amongst others. Nominated for Oscars. Won? No, I don't think he's won. But he's made some quality films.
I'm actually, I was actually between two. My other one was one that I never thought fit. And my other one was Robert Zemeckis. And the reason I Robert Zemeckis kind of ties into one of my other castings. So honestly, my other one was just for the pure sake of having like a really acclaimed director do it. But I couldn't find that actual, you know, we always kind of defend our point. Like, this is why I think they'd do a good job. Just his name alone was like, he would do a good job, but I didn't know really where to defend him from. I was going to say like a Martin Scorsese. Yeah, Quentin Tarantino.
Even but, Martin Scorsese.
Yeah, but it's like, okay. He's so acclaimed, so good. But at the same time, it's like, this movie doesn't need a Martin Scorsese.
I hear you.
And I was going to mention Robert Zemeckis as well. So I'm down for Robert Zemeckis. If you're good with Robert Zemeckis.
I would say with your Scorsese point, he is more synonymous with like R-rated gangster films, things like that. He has done Hugo, which is a family film.
Yes.
And it's a wonderful film in that. But I don't know if he'd be a good fit for
movie. I didn't really
maybe
either.
For
I
the dramatic – the dramatic court
when Santa
scene.
And instead of bopping him on the head with his cane, he shoots him.
He stabs him in the stomach. He's like, am I a clown? Is that my funny to you? Do I amuse you?
Amuse you? Was in the bathroom. I took a leak and I piddled on my toe.
What the fuck?
I don't know. All right, let's go on. Then Robert Zemeckis is our director. What about composer? Who you want doing the music of this picture?
I'm making a Bob Zemeckis film. I got Alan Silvestri doing my music.
Alan Silvestri doing your music. I had in mind for this, so Alan Silvestri does the Avengers, Back to the Future, a lot of great pictures. So he's definitely a fit for that. Now, I know we've used him before, and we've used Alan Silvestri before. For this movie, for the sake of this movie, he hasn't done Christmas music in a long time. He did a phenomenal job last time he did it. And that is why I am going to cast for this film John Williams.
Jean-Claude Van Damme.
John Williams. We've used both of these before. But man, oh man, his work on Home Alone. Think about that, like the Christmas music in Home Alone.
My nipples are hard again.
Yeah, it's all so good. Fits perfectly in the movie. His use of classical music, and then also sputtering in his own, like the Home Alone theme. It's almost creepy. Like when you listen to the Home Alone theme, it just gives you the feels every time. Like at the very beginning, when it's just like the home. So it's he just does such a good job, and he's so iconic. And he hasn't really. I don't think he's done Christmas music since Home Alone.
Harry Potter.
Happy Christmas, Harry.
Happy Christmas, Ron.
Yeah, not a Christmas movie. Maybe a holiday film, not a Christmas movie. Whoa. So Christmas music he hasn't done in a while. I think he'd be a perfect fit. How you feel? You want to flip me for it?
I'll flip you off for it.
Flip me off for it. All right. Heads, Alan Silvestri. Tails, John Williams.
Oh, boy.
My dude. All right. So we got John Williams doing the music. How about on to our next bit, Mr. Gailey.
Mr. Gailey.
Yes.
Well, who are you feeling for our attorney here? Tom Cruise?
Yeah, Tom Cruise for Mr. Gailey.
I want the truth.
Yeah.
I am Kris Kringle.
Yeah. When it comes to Mr. Gailey, how old do you think he is?
Mid-30s. Mid-30s. Maybe early 40s.
Yeah. So when I was kind of looking at Mr. Gailey, I was trying to think of someone that could maybe play this older/younger guy. And I wasn't entirely sure of his age. I can pull that up now. But someone who could pull off this kind of suaveness, some charm, intelligence at the same time. And I did come across an actor I think could pull that off. I just wasn't sure about... Oh, yeah, he'd be good fit. His age fits. And that's Mr. Benedict Cumberbatch.
Oh,
I think he's tall. He could pull off that business aspect.
Looks like a lizard. He'd be perfect.
He's 42.
Oh, really?
So I think he's a little older, but I think he could pull it off.
Benedict Cumberbatch.
He has a wide range. He's proven himself in many films. This is Doctor Strange, for those of you who don't know.
This is fucking Sherlock.
Sherlock Holmes. Smaug.
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 Khan.
Yeah, Khan. He's just proven himself in a lot of different films. He's just a really good actor. I think he would be able to play that high class. Yeah. High class.
But he's like down to earth too.
He
likes the girl next door.
Look at him as the doctor, the asshole doctor at the beginning of Doctor Strange. That only nicer.
He likes the girl next door. He adores the daughter. He just wants what's best for him.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that. I like that pool. I also had similar reasonings for my actor, someone who can be a little classy, you know, someone who's a seasoned actor who's done it all. He's also been in superhero films, but he's also been a classy MF. That's Tobey Maguire. Real pull.
I'm already shutting it down.
What?
Tobey
Maguire.
I hate Toby.
What the fuck? What? I'm going to flip the table.
Do it.
Rip my shirt off.
Toby.
Can't.
You're going to ruin the film.
Why would that ruin the film?
He's so goofy. He's so awkward. Even in Brothers, he's awkward.
In Brothers, he has PTSD.
He's awkward about it.
That guy's acting funny. Something's up with him.
I watch him.
I'd watch out for that guy over there. He's got PTSD. Something's up with him.
Jesus. I think Benedict Cumberbatch is a better pull. I'll fight you with that. You have to agree with me here. You got Benedict Cumberbatch playing the suave neighbor lawyer.
Yeah.
You got goofy Tobey Maguire.
Hey, he's his boy next door. He's Spider-Man, damn it.
This is for you.
you got me there.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah.
Toby. We'll go old Benny, baby.
You know it's the better thing.
We'll go Cumberbatch.
What about Miss Walker?
Tough. You know, I was like looking at her, and this is, I don't want to say it's just based on looks, but she like looked like someone I've seen more recently, and it clicked with me while I was watching. I was like, it's a great actress, obviously. This role is a very good role, very important, and it's kind of like the emotional arc, because like someone who's like so set in their ways and like doesn't believe, and that's the whole point of the movie, is to get you to believe. And so she's very important to this film. Why not Natalie Portman?
I do like that.
Yes.
I think she'd be able to pull that role off well, especially for that time. At the time and age and everything. I think she's very elegant, and she could pull off, like, I don't want my daughter listening to your nonsense. I think she could pull that off for sure. I'd like that pull a lot. My pull is based solely on her most recent film. It hasn't come out yet. It's set, I think it's set kind of, that long, I don't know why you're making that face, set in the past, though, and that's Emily Blunt. Emily Blunt's playing Mary Poppins in Mary Poppins Return, which she looks phenomenal.
Mary Poppins, y'all.
Yeah, she looks phenomenal in it, and what? You don't think so?
I said,
Oh.
Looks phenomenal.
She looks like she's going to play the part really well.
Oh, yeah, certainly.
She's
always great.
Yeah, and I think that... she's a solid pull for that.
Good. She's great.
Yeah, she is really good. Then we can swap out Robert Zemeckis, get John Krasinski in there directing it.
Have you?
Because they're married, right?
Yeah. Have you seen A Quiet Place yet?
Uh-uh.
Great.
Yeah.
Great movie. And Emily Blunt's fantastic in it too.
Yeah. You know, she's great in everything.
Yeah, that's.
What
that's
are some fair. Other films she's in other than Mary Poppins Returns?
Yeah, that? I'm only gonna think of like her mainstream shit. I remember. Well, she's in. Edge of Tomorrow, Live, Die, and Repeat for the layperson.
The Devil Wears Prada.
Hey, she's in...
Into the Woods.
Adjustment Bureau, Into the Woods.
Looper.
Oh, yeah, she's in Looper.
Huntsman, Winter's War.
Ugh.
Siscario.
Siscario?
Cesario. Cesudio. Yeah.
Sicario.
Sicario.
Cesario. Cesario.
Yeah, so we got Emily Blunt and Natalie Portman. Natalie Wood.
Hey, why don't you flip me for that, John? All
right, heads, Emily Blunt. Tails, Natalie Portman. We got heads.
All right.
You're losing hard here. Yeah. You got one pull. That was your director. Susan, I guarantee you win this one. Who you got?
I don't know.
No, you really don't know, because I don't really either.
I don't know any, like, young actors.
You got to go young actresses, because it's a girl.
Say. That's what I meant to say.
I type in young actresses, the first thing that pops up is Keira Knightley and Jennifer Lawrence. Yikes.
Yeah, that's a little too old nowadays.
Baby actors. Does that work?
Careful what you find.
Actresses in their
prime.
Younger than 10.
Yeah, good
Younger luck. Than 10. What we got?
I don't know. I'm doing the same thing. I'm like... We're ill prepared.
60 up and coming child actors on IMDb.
How about Honey Boo Boo? I don't know any of these people.
We got the girl from Modern Family. She's younger. I'm looking. Yeah, a lot of these are not
people I know.
That or they're like not young. Like, they're old still now. Like, they're older now.
Right.
We got ourselves in a pickle here, didn't we?
Yes, we did.
How about we cast Natalie Wood? Young Natalie Wood.
Yeah, young Natalie Wood. I wish like, Abigail Breslin. Or, no.
That's what I want.
I wish, like, Dakota Fanning was, like, young. Like, her and I Am Sam would have been perfect in this.
I'm trying to think of movies that have, like, a young actress in them, like, recently, and I can't think of anything.
Not that I've seen.
Even, like, right down to, like, I can't really.
I mean, shit. Well, fuck. Millie Bobby Brown.
All right, this is what we'll do. We'll make an exception to this. Perfect world. Time machine. We're getting Dakota Fanning to play that. You want to get, like, perfect world? Like, we're going back in time. We're going to, like, go up to Dakota Fanning and be like, hey, you're coming with me.
Come with me if you want to live.
Young Dakota Fanning.
Oh, my God. Yeah, we suck.
That's the one, like, I couldn't think of any movies that have, like, you. We had a hard time with Anakin last week for a young pool for, like, because those are just, they're lesser known.
Yeah, it's tough. Or we just suck.
Nah, both. We're gonna
Maybe
pull it back
both
with our
happening at the
we'll
same
pull it back
time.
With our Santa Claus here. So okay. I do wanna say we threw this to Twitter. Today and asked on Twitter, which you can find us at the Bros Movie Pod, asked who would people want to have as their Santa Claus in a movie if they had to recast Santa Claus, who would they want playing old Kris Kringle? And I got some really fun responses. I really liked them. And Gus hasn't heard these yet, so these are the first time he's going to be hearing them. So the first one that we got asked for LeVar Burton. LeVar Burton, Reading Rainbow. He played Geordi on Star Trek The Next Generation. Their reasoning was, let me pull it up here, that he was just great in the Reading Rainbow, and it'd be really fun to have an African-American Santa. And, I mean, he was great in the Reading Rainbow, from what I remember.
Reading Rambo.
Reading Rambo.
Different show.
But, no, yeah, he was great in that, and I do like it would be different.
You like that Star Trek action.
Yeah, too. I do like that Star Trek action, and I think it would be a really good idea, and we got some other people hopping on with us there. They said they'd jump on that bandwagon, too. But, yeah, LeVar Burton, Reading Rainbow, cool. They have a black Santa, and they thought that he would be a perfect fit as well. Another one we got for that tweet there, we had another poll that I enjoyed, which was Mr. Sean Connery.
Dust him off.
Coming out of retirement. And they said all they would want him to say is ho, ho, ho once.
Ho, ho, ho. There's your one.
Yeah.
Now you listen here. The quest for Christmas is not archaeology. It's a rage against evil.
No,
it's the Nazis get a hold of it. The armies of darkness are marching all over the face of the earth.
What about, can you say the name's Claus, Santa Claus?
The name's Claus, Santa Claus.
The next one we got here was Sir Ian McKellen. And I just sent that.
What's it say? Prepare for battle. Prepare for presents. Prepare. Flame of Undoon.
But I was looking at his pictures as Gandalf. I'm like, Santa?
We'll not be accepting any guests or unwanted visitors today.
And what about very old friends?
Santa?
It is Santa. So
yeah, you like your Ian McKellen, too.
I do like our Ian McKellen. I like him there as a solid fit. But that brings us to ours here.
I would say, any more polls there?
I don't think so. I think that we ran through them all there. Any others? Who you got in mind for Santa?
Well, I had to think about how Edmund, stop it. Edmund Gwen made me feel in this movie. He made me feel whisked away in magic. He had that twinkle in his eye. He was charming. He was sweet. And he was the embodiment of Santa. So it's tough to find someone who can do that. Many have played Santa before and made it their own. So I wanted to pick someone who today I would feel... This might sound a little odd, but safe. You know, he'd pat you on the head and be like, it's going to be all right. That's Tom Hanks.
Holy tits. That's what I had.
Do you?
Yeah, I have it written down already, too.
Tom Hanks. Oh,
tussle my hair, Mr. Hanks. Sure thing, son. That's Mr. Rogers himself.
Yeah. That's Mr. Banks himself. There
Mr.
Too.
Banks, he has played Santa Claus before. You are aware of this.
Has he?
Polar Express.
Yeah, that's right.
He plays Santa Claus. He plays the spirit of Christmas. He plays the conductor. And he plays the narrator.
Ah.
Yeah, he's several characters in that. But he has worked with Robert Zemeckis, which was my pull, because he also worked with Robert Zemeckis in Forrest Gump, as well as in the Polar Express.
Did he direct Apollo 13, too?
I don't believe so.
Believe in what your heart desires.
Now we need Josh Groban to do the music.
I thought he was. Oh, wait. No, we changed our mind. Apollo...
18.
Apollo Creed.
Apollo 13, the film, is directed by...
I think it's Rob
Zemeckis. No.
Ron Howard.
No, Ron Howard. Ron Howard.
I knew
that. Oh, yeah, because... We got some numbers on the screen. He doesn't see so good.
I knew that.
He's got a
son
little...
of a bitch.
That movie, holy hell, that cast is crazy. Yeah. Let me just read. Tom Hanks, Bill Paxton, Kevin Bacon, Gary Sinise, Ed Harris. Like, right there. It's like, what the hell? Mm-hmm. This movie.
Great movie.
Yeah, I haven't seen that in... I haven't seen that.
I haven't seen that since ever.
Yeah, no, Tom Hanks speaks for himself. Jesus. He's just so good. And he would be able to play that Santa Claus so well. He's so warm and cuddly.
That's what I said. I feel good. I feel safe.
Yeah, you feel safe with old Tommy. Tommy.
Unless I'm in a plane with him.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then you feel safe then.
And then you feel like you're going to end up on an island. All right. Well, that is our factory here. We got our director, Robert Zemeckis. We casted our composer, John Williams. Our Mr. Gailey, Benedict Cumberbatch. Miss Walker, Emily Blunt. Dakota Fanning as our Susan. But this is Time Machine Dakota Fanning, so we have to go back to when she's innocent little baby. I am Sam. Dakota Fanning. And then our Santa, played by a very worthy Tom Hanks.
Hey.
Isn't that good for you?
I feel safe with that.
All right. Well, that is the factory. We all good to go. You have anything else you want to...
Well, we're reeling in the holidays, mm-hmm. So expect some holiday-ish films. Maybe not all Christmas jams.
Holiday cheermeisters?
Yeah. Maybe not all Christmas jams, but ones that'll put you in the mood.
Mm.
All right. Yeah. So we kicked it off here with Old Miracle on 34th Street, a classic indeed. One you should check out if you haven't, for sure. Don't be discouraged by, you know, it pisses me off when people are like, it's in black and white. I'm not watching it.
No, no. It's better. It's better than the remake.
I would say. And it's an experience. You gotta check it out.
Yeah.
Don't be afraid. Come on.
It's not your fault.
Yeah. So, yeah, check it out.
Okay. All right. You got anything else before we wrap it up here?
It's your turn for a
little bit. It's my turn.
Gamesy.
The only one I had for you is, what was the last time that you can remember that, like, what you wanted for Christmas, like, it was, like, what you wanted, and you were, like, right around this time of the year, like, right now, you're, like, circling it in calendars and writing it down, that's all you can think of. What was, the last gift that you can remember getting like that about, where you're, like, I can't wait for Christmas morning so I can have this, like, I want it so bad?
Because
I think I remember mine.
I would say it was maybe I was like 13, 14, and I wanted a PlayStation 2.
So that SmackDown versus Raw action.
Yeah, that SmackDown versus Raw.
How old would you have been?
I just told you.
No, and I'm trying to think of the year, I guess. That's what I was actually thinking.
Of what?
What year? How old would you have been? Like, or you were 13, so what year would that have been?
It was like 2003, 2004.
Was it 2000? I think I can't help but feel like it was 2004, because I got a DS the year you got a PS2.
It was 2005.
I got Madden 2005, and that comes out the year before. So it would have been Christmas 2004, right before 2005. We'll figure it out.
Well, I'll wait until you're in front of the mic before you start talking.
No,
you're
no.
like over here. I couldn't hear you.
Yeah, no.
Too well. I think that was it. Maybe some PlayStation 2 action. Is what I was dying for. It's either that or there was the year I wanted the GameCube more than anything.
That was fantastic.
It was like, what do you want for Christmas? I was like, GameCube. That's all I wanted. Anytime anyone asked, that was it. I was 10, 11, 10. That's what I wanted. Didn't get it.
You got a note.
An avocado.
It was like an envelope with like $100 in it and said like fund.
I don't even remember.
I'm pretty sure you did.
I remember saving up, though, after that. And
I'm pretty sure that's what we got. We got, like, an envelope of money.
Maybe that was the life lesson, like, save up. Yes, I did. I saved up a good old chunk of change.
We got Road Rage and...
Simpsons Road Rage and 007 Age Under Fire, an extra controller, a memory card, and the GameCube.
We played those games
saved
for
up my own money.
Years.
Still do.
Yeah.
I still play it.
Last time I can think of that was that same year you got the PS2, was the DS. I remember wanting a Nintendo DS so bad. And I remember vividly having a dream where I had the DS. Like, I had it in my hands, and I was playing it. And I remember being so upset when I woke up and realized that it was just a dream. Like, I didn't have the DS yet. That was the last time I can really remember. That or the PSP. I remember being really hyped for a PSP. I think that was the following year. I was like, I really would love to have a PSP. And I remember the PSP Christmas vividly, because I remember that year you got the Undertaker DVDs, and you fell asleep, and I got like PSP and like Imagine X stuff or something, and I built a bunch of stuff, or I don't know, I forget. I think maybe it was Legos. Are you sure
that wasn't a dream too?
Maybe. I know I got PSP and you got the Undertaker thing. Yeah. Oh, it was. I know what it was. It wasn't Imagine X. It was. Do you remember those? They were like the hexagonal things you made, like they had like figurines. I forget what they were called.
Was it a game?
It was like Heroescape, I think, was what it was called. Heroescape. Mm-hmm. I got a bunch of those, and I got a PSP. Right. Twisted Metal Head On,
hey.
Need for Speed Rivals, and Midnight Club. Midnight Club Dub Edition. Midnight Club 3 Dub Edition.
A lot of racing games. But I'll say, besides the gifts and all that, what do you have? Do you have a memory maybe of a Christmas time, just of the time, just a mood or a feeling or a moment that wasn't centered around a present?
I know every Christmas Eve growing up, we used to have a big family get together at our house, and then one year, I can't remember the specific year, was the first year that we didn't have it, and ever since then, I've never really had the same Christmas Eve feeling. You know, growing up, we had, you know, I wake up Christmas Eve morning, tomorrow's Christmas Day, and it was this day long, like, I just want tomorrow to come. And that Christmas Eve felt like it took forever. But it was a day of getting ready for family to come, watching Christmas movies, you know, getting excited about what tomorrow is going to bring, having that tree smell, having the candles burning, the Christmas music playing, having family slowly walk in, getting all that food in there, smelling and everything. I think that's definitely like that
artichokes.
Yeah, that Christmas Eve feeling, or any time like with family, any of our family Christmases is always like it brings you back. But for some reason, nothing beats like being a kid. Like you just, when you're a kid, you want. It's not about the presents. Like as you get older, you realize like what actually Christmas is about. But when you're younger, there's that magic and there's that like I can't wait to see what I got. And this like
what's a memory you have about Christmas without the presents?
You're like, no, that's what I'm saying. That's okay. What I'm saying though. Like now that I'm older, like I still have these family Christmases, but something's missing. Like that feeling, that Christmas feeling sometimes where you're like, you know, it's great to see everyone, it's great to be around everyone, but like. Why are we all here? It's Christmas, but why are we all here? Like, what's the meaning of all of it? And you have to come to boil down, like, it's Christmas time. So my favorite memory, I think, definitely is that when I was younger and I was waiting for Christmas Day, waiting for all that, and I had that anticipation, that angst built up, but I was also having all this family come in, watching these movies all day, getting ready for Christmas. You know, we used to go to church, and then we would come back, and I'd sort out all the presents for everyone to, and like just things like that, the little things, throwing out reindeer food in the middle of the night, and different things like that. You don't get when you get older.
The closest I've gone to that magical feeling, I mentioned on the pod once before. It was just a couple years ago. It was my first Christmas. I was gonna spend all by myself, and you came out of nowhere, and we got drunk and drank eggnog and played Duck Hunt. Like,
that's what we're gonna do this year, Dan.
That was a new kind of magic.
Nah, yeah.
Maybe that's what it's all about. We gotta find that magic.
Yeah, that's the thing. Because I even said like my fiance, like we now do her family family Christmas Eve, not family Thanksgiving, but family Christmas Eve. They have a big dinner and everything, and then the following day we do Christmas at our house. And it's just it's definitely a little different. But I've spent every Christmas Eve at the house. It's always, it's just been a finding our traditions, I guess. Yeah. You get that tradition, you gotta stick with it.
Find your traditions together. I don't know what my traditions are going to be like with my fiance, Becky Lynch.
Yeah.
She's a little busy. So.
Yeah, she's busy being the man.
Yeah, she's busy.
Yeah.
Being fucking champ.
All righty, well, let's wrap this up here while you're kissing Becky there. So I hope you enjoyed the show. If you liked what you heard, hopefully you're listening to us on whatever you are, Spotify or Audio Boom. But we are on several other podcasting places. We are on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio. We were on Google Play. I don't know what happened. That was reported that we're missing from there, so I'm going to check into that. But we are on Spotify and Audio Boom as well, so feel free to check us out on any of those and leave some reviews. You can also find us on Twitter at The Bros Movie Pod. We love to be involved. We love to hear from you. I love to hear your conversations, hear who you would cast in these films. We might throw that out. This was kind of a success today. I liked hearing from other people, getting our ideas, so I would love to hear more. And I'm sure you would as well. I thought that was kind of fun hearing from other people, hearing some ideas.
Indeed.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's the show, everyone. Hope everyone's having a good holiday season so far. And until next week, I think that's a wrap. Brothers?
Brothers.
Brothers.